Republican Congressman Reed Ribble represents Wisconsin's 8th congressional district. He was one of a few members of Congress who served on the conference committee that is giving the nation a $320 billion five-year transportation spending plan. Wisconsin-Eye interviews him from his office in Congressman. Congressman Ribble, thanks for coming back to Wisconsin-Eye, even though it's over Skype, my friend.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. I'm Wisconsin-Eye, and it's good to be with you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, here's where I want to start. You're quoted in Politico. Well, okay, let's talk about the good news is. This is okay. Transportation spending has been kicked down the road, kicked down the road for years. So we have some certainty here. $320 billion over 5 years. But Politico quotes you as saying it's paid for with phony pay-fors. Let's start with that, Congressman.
Yeah. I went to the floor of the House last Thursday or Friday, whatever day we voted on it. I've lost track. And I kind of lit the pay-fors on fire because they're not real. And I felt that I started my speech at the very beginning saying I really like the policy of this bill. I like the fact that it's 5 years. And I ended my speech with that. But in between, I wanted the American people to know that about $100 billion of that, even though they're being told it's paid for, that it's being offset by these other things, they're not real. And so, and I'll give you one example. They're selling 66 million barrels of petroleum from the petroleum reserve, but they priced it at $94 a barrel. And now, if you can find someone who's going to pay $94 a barrel when oil's on the spot market at 41, I could probably find a bridge to sell you someplace. I mean, this is the type of thing that they did to make the numbers work, but it's not real.
And they're into the Federal Reserve? They're reaching into the Federal Reserve, Congressman?
Well, the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Customs Service. I mean, one of the things I thought was really crazy was they indexed the taxes on customs, on imports, but they didn't index the gas tax, which is what we use to charge users for the use of the roads they drive on.
Okay, let's go back to the gas tax, because 18.4 cents since President Clinton was president, 1993. So here's my question. You've been out there a little bit now. Hundreds of special interest groups were involved in this. It couldn't get solved for years. Why can't anybody in Congress raise the federal gas tax now 18.4 cents per gallon, my friend?
I've been trying to make that case because I believe that the gas tax should have been raised. I believe that when you do what we just did and you separate the user from the use, roads have always been paid for by the user. Whether they're big truck drivers or whether someone driving a car or a motorcycle, they pay for it. But the purchasing power, as you just kind of described, the gas tax went up the last time in 1993. It's 18.4 cents a gallon. Its purchasing power today is less than 11 cents. And so we keep having this big gap that gets filled in with general fund transfers. And so there's no certainty. That's why it's taken a decade to get a five-year bill, because no one here is willing to tell the American people the truth. And here's the truth. If something is worth buying, this new road, this new bridge, this new train, whatever it is, if it's worth buying, it is certainly worth paying for. If it is not worth paying for, it might not be worth buying. And we have to start looking at it through this lens. And so that's what's been so frustrating. I've been talking about the gas tax with my constituent back in Northeast Wisconsin for 4 years, because I don't think we should ask our children to pay for our roads, because when they grow up, they'll have their own roads to pay for.
So are members of Congress going back to the first President Bush's pledge, read my lips, no new gas tax increase?
Well, clearly that's what they're doing, but it's not just Republicans, it's also Democrats. And so people are afraid of the gas tax because it is so in your face. I mean, every single time any constituent goes in to gas up their car, it's right there. And they don't want to go back to constituents on something so obvious. So instead, they raise taxes on the future. And that's totally not obvious, while simultaneously telling the American people that they're paying for it. That's what's so frustrating to me.
Well, crude prices, as you say, now they're between 40 and 41. You can buy gas in Madison now for $187.9. With these low prices, isn't that one argument to raise the federal gas tax, sir?
Well, certainly it would be one that you should consider. One of the things that I proposed, along with Jim Renacci from Ohio, was that we just simply index the gas tax starting today, just index it so that if inflation goes up, it goes up with inflation. Over the 6 year or 5 year highway bill, that would have paid for 1 year, and then use the threat of a gas tax increase as an enforcement trigger. Okay, Congress, you have got 12 months. If you don't come up with a legitimate funding that can pass the Congress in these 12 months, the gas tax bumps up 3 cents a gallon automatically, and you start the clock again for another 6 months. Basically, it would have taken about 3 cents a gallon each year for 5 years, and you would have pretty well paid that whole bill.
And how many votes do you think in the House that plan would have gotten had there been a floor vote on it, sir?
I think it would have gotten 160 to 200. And if we had had time to actually talk about it and sell it and debate it on the floor of the House, we might have had a shot at passing it.
Okay. Okay. But also, this is a bill to establish some certainty that's got to become law, $320 billion over 5 years. Is it good or bad for the state of Wisconsin, Congressman?
Well, I think it's really good for the state of Wisconsin, and it's good for the economy in general. We know that every single moment that someone going to work is sitting in their car waiting in a traffic jam, or more importantly, some product or good or service that's being shipped. Imagine the food going to a grocery store in Chicago, sitting in a truck someplace for an hour or longer. That keeps raising the cost of these goods and services because we can't move goods and services about the country efficiently anymore. And we have to begin to address this in a way that would grow the economy. As far as Wisconsin goes, they get roughly $355 million above the baseline over the five-year period. And so it's a pretty good win for Wisconsin.
Okay, but what about the leaders back here in our capital, Reed, like Speaker Voss, who really want to see the potential of toll roads being explored? Now, my understanding is Missouri, North Carolina, and Virginia had the option to experiment with toll roads, but this package that's going to become law doesn't open up tolling for states like Wisconsin, or am I wrong?
You're both right and wrong.
Okay, correct me then.
If one of those three states does not implement tolling in the next 12 months, they lose their right to be in the pilot program, and a state like Wisconsin can apply to go in. But at that point, the clock starts ticking for them, and they would have to move to actually make the steps necessary to implement it. Now, I'm personally not a big fan of tolling because it's such an expensive way to tax for the road building. However, I believe in the fact that the 10th Amendment of the Constitution should allow states the right to toll the interstate. But let's be clear, every governor in the United States has the ability to toll today on any state road that they choose. And so if Governor Walker or Robin Voss wanted to toll Highway 47 from Appleton to Bondiwell, there's nothing that would prevent them from doing that right now.
I thought current law said you could only toll in states like Wisconsin on new interstates, sir. Correct.
The state of Wisconsin can't even toll. The state of Wisconsin cannot toll on any federal interstate.
Okay.
Without permission of the federal government.
Okay. But Wisconsin can toll on its own state highways?
Sir, they always could. They've always been able to do that.
Okay.
But you see, the reason they don't do that is because constituents believe that tolling is good, because we can, if we toll the interstate, we as local drivers can avoid the toll, avoid the tax, and just have the trucking industry and tourists pay it, you know. And so that's always kind of the argument. Americans generally like taxes that another American pays, not that they pay.
Well, is tolling a better alternative than if you can't raise the gas tax, the federal gas tax?
Sure.
Tolling is better then, right?
Yeah, and I was an advocate for giving every state the ability to toll on the interstate system if they wanted. It would be up to their governor and their DOT and legislatures to make that decision. I don't think it's appropriate for Washington, D.C. to make the determination. I lost that argument with my colleagues on the Transportation Committee, and so this pilot program that's been in place now for a few years just stayed in the law.
We talked about why Washington can't raise the federal gas tax. I understand that. But why did you hit the impasse on the tolling idea that you just put forth, that states should have the ability to toll on federal highways?
There's some very powerful interest groups that oppose tolling, and one of them is the trucking industry. The trucking industry, they hate tolling because, in essence, they get double taxed. They get taxed the 25 cents or so a gallon, 24 and a half cents a gallon they're paying for diesel fuel, and then they get taxed again with the toll. And so the trucking industry is saying, hold it, time out. We would rather you just raise our diesel fuel tax and forget the tolling altogether. And they're a fairly powerful lobbying group. But they were lobbying for an increase in the user fee in the gas tax.
Well, what's your advice then to our leaders in our capital in terms of long-term transportation funding? They shouldn't look to tolling, but they're going to get some additional money, but it doesn't result. We're borrowing $850 million in this current biennium. So as a conferee on the transportation package, what's your advice to our capital leaders on how to pay for our state transportation spending?
Yeah, always a bit cautious to do it, but I'll wade into that pool a little bit.
Okay.
I would say it has to start with the ideology that I articulated a bit earlier. If something's worth buying, it's worth paying for, and that they should take a look at every single user in the system. That would include those on transit and those riding buses. We don't really have rail in Wisconsin. Transit users, cars and light-duty trucks and heavy trucks, and then also electric and hybrids, and begin to figure out ways that they can pull all those users in, so any increase to raise that $800 million would be spread across every single user of the system rather than just key users of the system.
Okay, but when you say it's good news, this package for the state of Wisconsin, you're saying then in general transportation, highway aids, Wisconsin is going to get $355 million more over 5 years?
Over 5 years, that's correct.
Over 5 years.
Okay.
Well, what did you learn?
What the baseline was, which was about $650 million.
Yes, thank you, over the baseline. What did you learn about serving on a conference committee on one of the most contentious issues in Congress, which, as you point out, hasn't been solved for 10 years?
Well, what I learned is that to actually get at the finance side of it, that being a conferee on the transportation committee did not allow me the benefit of dealing with the finance, because there were conferees from the committees of jurisdiction. And so those of us who write and authorize transportation policy were not in the room when the debate went on about the funding of it.
Wow.
And what they should have done is let all of us in the room on the whole 1,300-page piece of legislation so we could have spoke to all of it. But we were not. We were divided out to our areas of expertise.
This is the first major package under Speaker Paul Ryan. Is it a victory for him, because it's also a victory for Wisconsin? Remember the old concept of pork barrel? Is there any pork in this for Wisconsin, Reed?
Well, there's no pork allowed in the House of Representatives. We cannot earmark money, so there's none of that.
Okay.
It's just the dollars. The real pork for Wisconsin, though, quite frankly, is the devolution of the rules and the fact that they can put this money in their general fund, and as long as they use it for roads and bridges and transit, they can do pretty much whatever the Secretary Gottlieb thinks is best for Wisconsin. I think that's a big win. As far as for Paul Ryan, he had two big conference reports that passed, the No Child Left Behind reauthorization and the transportation bill. Speaker Ryan's off to a really great start, and things are really starting to work well in the Congress again.
Okay, I want to respect your schedule, but you serve on the Committee on Foreign Affairs, you're vice chair of the Subcommittee on Europe, Eurasia, and Emerging Threats. Your reaction to the president's speech last night, sir?
Well, for the most part, I thought it was a good speech. I mean, he's trying to calm some frayed edges and some raw nerves. The problem with the speech, that as far as my take on it is that he articulated his four steps or policy provision to deal with ISIS, but these have been the four steps that he's been using to deal with ISIS for the last 4 years. And so there was nothing new that he introduced into the discussion last night, other than it was him actually talking about it to the American people. Overall, a relatively disappointing speech, I felt.
Is our strategy to crush ISIS with our international partners not working, Congressman?
It hasn't worked so far, and that's because we haven't been leading our international effort. Without regard to what the president would like to say, you just look at the difference between France's reaction to what happened in Paris and the U.S. reaction to what happened in San Bernardino. And I mean, within hours, France was all over ISIS inside Syria. And I mean, there was a dramatic increase in the level of involvement by French armed forces in Syria. We've not seen that here from President Obama yet.
Is ISIS a greater a threat to Americans on our domestic soil than ever before, Congressman?
Oh, there's no doubt. I don't think there's any doubt, and I don't think anybody would even challenge it. Their ability to communicate and recruit via social media is something that has been untested and something we've not seen before. And so when we engage in this, and the president talked a little bit about it last night, but I felt this is one of the key points that we have to drive home, is we have to get involved in the cyber world when it comes to ISIS. We have to deal with it at its source of recruitment.
And I'm going to use the cliche. How many American boots do we need on the ground eventually to crush ISIS, sir?
I'm glad you said it's a cliche, because I don't like to look at his boots. There's a real soldier, a Marine inside those shoes.
Yes, sir.
But I'm not sure. It's going to be dependent solely on whether the president here can put together a coalition of forces that will ultimately determine how many U.S. soldiers and Marines we're going to have on the ground. But I believe it's going to take some.
Okay. Can my last question be on GOP presidential politics?
It can be.
Okay. Will Donald Trump? Will Donald Trump be your party's nominee?
No, he will not.
He will not be. Okay.
He will not. 70% of Republicans reject Donald Trump. I just don't see him. As the field thins, those votes are not going to go to Donald Trump. They're going to go to somebody else.
Okay. And who are the three or four finalists?
I think the three or four finalists end up being Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, and Chris Christie.
And who is Congressman Reed Ribble backing?
I'm not backing any of them at this point. I'm waiting to see how they do, and I want to see how they perform. And when the field gets a little bit smaller, right now, candidate Trump has sucked all the oxygen out of the room. So it's been difficult to hear from the other candidates. The media's enamored with the guy because he's such an entertaining force. Once the media stops babying him and just giving him all the time, we'll be able to hear from the other candidates to learn more about their ideas.
Congressman Reed Ribble, thanks very much. The transportation package is very important to Wisconsin. Thanks for your time, sir.
You're welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you.